WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latte from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
All right, how many times have you used Google already this morning? And your searches probably gave you what you were looking for. But a new book says that our faith in Google may lead us down the wrong path. It is called The Googleization of Everything and Why We Should Worry. And with me in studio today is its author, Siva Vaidyanathan, professor of media studies and law at the University of Virginia. Hey, Siva, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks.
And really to good. New York. You were a friend of the studio when you taught at NYU. So good to see you again. Shall we start with an appreciation of Google? It has made our web lives easier and faster, you know, from content searches to maps to Gmail, everything else. It protects us from malware relatively well and all for free.
Yeah. In fact, I used it to find directions to your studio today. And that's one of the things I would like people to get from this book is a sincere appreciation of the craftspersonship that goes into making amazing tools like Google. My problem with how we use Google, and it's much more than a problem with Google, it's a problem with us really, is that we tend to consider it to be magical. We tend not to want to know what's behind the simple and clean interface. I think we would be healthier users of all sorts of technologies if we actually took the time to get under the hood. These days, and it's not just computer technologies or the internet, right? It goes down to our cars. We are pretty much encouraged not to look under the hood, to simply accept these technologies on faith. That's where I think where we might get into trouble. To me, truly admiring great work will let us both approach technologies critically and give it sufficient respect.
So what are you finding when you look under the hood that might be the most troubling?
Well, some really interesting things, and some of these things are troubling. So and they're really only troubling based on one's own value position. Now, for about 12 years now, or 10 years for most of us, we've had a pretty good ride with Google. Google has managed to connect us to the cheapest products, the best services, the easiest ways to get to restaurants, and it's helped us figure out how to settle bar bets, how to deal with trivia, how to explore, what this rash is, those sorts of questions. It's helped us both in shopping and learning. What we're seeing now in recent months is that Google is clearly changing how it judges information for us to be better for shopping and not necessarily better for learning.
Even today, with the dominance of Facebook and the pace of change online, does Google still rule the web? You've been writing this book kind of as a series of thematic blog posts for a number of years. We've had a few Googleization of conversations, of everything conversations with you already over a period of years. Now the book is out just at the moment that we hear Facebook is changing the basic structure of our experience online from being search-oriented to being social-oriented.
Yeah, I wouldn't go quite that far. I think we're adding a tremendous amount of socially-oriented exploration and time on top of what we're already dealing with on the open web. So I write that Google is the benevolent dictator of the open web. It's like Julius Caesar. It stepped into a power vacuum long ago. It's not in any position to relinquish that power. Facebook actually controls its own part of our online experience, but it's not the open web. It's a gated community. Google has an incentive to keep us engaged with the open web all the various activities that are not Facebook, right, that are not in this gated community that Google can't monetize and can't monitor. And so Google does everything it can to keep our web experience pleasant, relatively porn-free, relatively dependable, as you said, does, you know, tries its best to keep us away from malware, although that's getting tougher. And for all these reasons, we have to pay a lot of attention to the policy decisions that Google makes and the values that Google bakes into its systems.
So, listeners, we have about 10 minutes for your phone calls for Siva Vaidyanathan, author of The Googleization of Everything. What faith, if any, do you have in Google? What about your own ability to ensure an internet that works for you and for all of us? Call us, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post your comment to our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And you're right that your book is overtly political,
right,
and, quote, calls for a reimagination of what we might build to preserve quality information and deliver it to everyone, unquote. What do you see as our collective responsibility as users of the web?
Well, we have this amazing potential to really defeat this many centuries-long problem of maldistribution of information, right? We have this amazing technologies. We have great public institutions that are engaged with these technologies. We have the ability to make sure that a 12-year-old growing up in South Africa is at no information disadvantage compared to a 12-year-old growing up in Sweden or Canada or New Jersey. And all it really takes to get to that point is the political will to do it. I'm afraid that our faith in companies like Google and our sort of our lazy libertarian attitudes toward technology companies has sort of let us celebrate Google's own initiatives in this area. What I mean by that is that our faith is helping to depoliticize us. We're not willing to fight for the good things. We just wish for a savior. We wish for a big, rich company to come in and do wonderful things for us. And I think that's deeply unhealthy.
I will mention that there's a reference to me in the book when I asked at the Aspen Institute a question in a big public forum of Eric Schmidt, the CEO of Google. And the question was, should Google be regulated like a public utility? Because it kind of got this monopoly infrastructure position. And a big laugh came up from the crowd.
Yeah, the big laugh was what really struck me. I mean, I thought your question was completely reasonable. I thought Eric Schmidt's response was predictable. The laugh was what really got me. This notion that it was so absurd in this all-too-knowing audience at the Aspen Ideas Festival that anyone would question whether a company like Google should, in fact, be regulated. And I thought it was a bad faith response on part of the audience, but also a bad faith response by Schmidt. Schmidt basically, and his initial answer was, well, of course, we don't want anything like a Soviet-style command economy. We tried that in the 20th century. And you wisely pushed at him and said, no, we're not talking about that. You know better than that. It's not an either-or decision here. It's about whether we want smart regulation. We went through with Microsoft. We went through with the banking crisis. What about that? And, of course, then he fell back on his argument that, you know, you should trust Google. Google's been very good, right? It has this be good to us ethic built into it. That was essentially his claim. And I found that deeply troubling, and it really elides the question. First of all, it doesn't even confront the fact that Schmidt knows that Google is regulated in 100 different ways, from copyright to antitrust to securities law, et cetera. And that's why Google spends so much money on lobbyists, right? Like every company does. The real question then is, are we regulating Google and other such companies appropriately? Are we over-regulating them in some areas, as I think we are, in terms of copyright? Are we under-regulating them in certain areas, as I think we are, in areas like privacy? So instead of having an adult conversation about each of these issues, we tend to find ourselves flopping around in this to regulate or not to regulate question. And that's undermined the maturity of our discussions about net neutrality. It's undermined our way of thinking through complex issues like our relationship with Google.
Let's take a call from somebody maybe in an interesting position to interact with Google professionally, and that is a librarian. Linda in West Caldwell, you're on WNYC. Thanks a lot for calling, Linda.
Yeah, I just love Google because I work with an interface which is the Online Public Access Catalog, which is ancient architecture And very, if you don't type in exactly the way the title of the book is, you don't get it. So people come in and they want maybe the third book in the Harry Potter series, and no, I don't have them all memorized, or other type series. It's so great to go onto Google and quickly access that information, cut and paste it right into my OPAC, and get the information, which is whether or not we have the book available for the patron.
Well, and that's so exactly, I'm sorry.
On the other hand, I have noticed in the last 6 years a major drop-off in the usage of our nonfiction collection because kids are definitely doing more of their research at home on the Internet.
Well, so two thoughts about that. First of all, it's not just kids, it's all of us. And I think all of us are being satisfied with the quick and easy answer that Google and the web provides to us. And while that's terrifically convenient, as I said, settling bar bets, it's not necessarily the best way to investigate complex issues, nuanced issues, issues that might deal with, you know, health issues or big environmental questions, right? For that, you really need the guidance of information professionals such as librarians, and you need the sort of intricate catalogs and services that libraries pay a lot of money for. And so one of the things I'd like to do with this book is get people to understand that Google's not the place to stop your search. It may be, as you use it, the place to start your search, but it's certainly not the best way to stop a search for something important and complex. And I would like people to sort of slow down and say, maybe the first answer isn't the best answer. Maybe the answer that Google sends to me in the most convenient form isn't going to give me the richest understanding. It's an odd thing to argue for here in 2011, but I would like us all to sort of slow down and take deep breaths and try to understand things better. I know it sounds crazy.
And in your book, and Linda, thank you for your call. Always appreciate the librarians, just like the teachers. But in your book, you propose a project to design a, quote, information ecosystem that would outlive Google, something you call the Human Knowledge Project. That sounds like a big idea.
Yeah. Well, the Human Knowledge Project is sort of inspired by the Human Genome Project, right? This multilateral, multi-level, multi-institution and multinational coordinated project of scientists from around the world who annotated the human genome in the last decade of the 20th century in direct competition with a smart, brilliant, ambitious private firm called Celera that was trying to do the same project, but to privatize access and use of the knowledge. And that competition between public and private was good for both institutions and ultimately good for biological research in the long term. That inspired me to say, why should our libraries, universities, and governments and schools be giving up, be relinquishing control to hundreds of years of knowledge to this company that's 12 years old, its voice isn't even starting to break? You know, it seems absurd to me when people who are really trained and have are publicly minded and have values in the right place and can have real vision can look 50 years down the road and say, what can we build? What sorts of laws must we change? What sorts of infrastructure must we fund? What sorts of value should we embed in the system? Because believe me, Google will not be the same company in 2020 as it is today. It's not the same as it was in 2000, and it might not even exist. Companies do fail, even companies as powerful and rich as Google.
Siva Vaidyanathan, author of The Googleization of Everything, and we've got a minute and a half left. I want to mention your event tomorrow at NYU. By way of background, people generally know that Google's corporate mantra is don't be evil. So you're headlining an event at NYU with the title Be Evil. Does corporate responsibility matter? We have a link to it on our website, but can you give us like a 30-second preview?
Yeah, sure. Like, I'm really concerned that our obsession with corporate social responsibility makes us sort of believe in it too much, especially when you deal with companies like Starbucks or Whole Foods or Google. And I think that, again, depoliticizes us. It makes us think that the consumer choices we make come close to real political action.
So be evil is a form of transparency because all corporations are evil?
No, it's not that. It's just I would prefer if we would not take seriously their claims of benevolence and understand that they are what they are, which is naked marketing attempts, which you, nothing wrong with that.
You'll have to come to our NYU event on Monday night, May 2nd, called Is Capitalism Moral? Right. So there you go. Also, before you go, you're also doing a book signing for the Googleization of Everything tonight, right?
At the Strand, my favorite bookstore in New York City.
12th Street in the Village. That's at 7 o'clock tonight. And the Be Evil event, 4 o'clock tomorrow, 4 p.m. at NYU, the building at 20 Cooper Square, Siva Vaidyanathan, law and media studies professor at the University of Virginia, and now the author of the book, The Googleization of Everything and Why We Should Worry. Thanks a lot. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.